Our next speaker is Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. And now, Rabbi, I am embarrassed to say that during my dying, I lost your credentials. So, perfect. So, I'm going to just say something before I let you speak. No, you don't get away that easy. What I did want to say regardless is that I had this chus of meeting Rabbi Leibowitz many years ago. The first time I met him, he was a Rebbe in, I don't know if it was 11th or 12th grade, I don't know exactly. And it was a chemistry class, and he was there, and it was very nice. And I saw how much his students respected him, and I was overwhelmed by how much they respected him. That was then. I stayed in touch with some of those students over years, and in touch with Rabbi Leibowitz over years. And turns out his students stay in touch with him much more. I have not met a teacher who is respected so much by his students as Rabbi Leibowitz, and I think you'll all find out shortly why that's so. Thank you, Rabbi.
What time
should I
open? You have until 12:15, if you want to leave time for questions, then we'll stop.
Wait, 12:15 is 5 minutes.
No, until 1 o'clock, pardon me. After 1 o'clock, so like 10 to 1, I'll tell you, or okay. Quarter to 1, I'll tell you that.
All right, great.
Okay.
First of all, it's a great pleasure to be here, and can we get the lights back on? I don't need this. Is that doable? Bereshus, Rabbi Marwick, it's great to be in your shul, and it's great to see you, an old classmate. It's so wonderful to see all of the success you're having in leading this wonderful kehila. I was tasked with the job of speaking about what is probably the most challenging question for those of us who wear tcheles, and that is, how can you have the chutzpah to wear tcheles when so many Gedolei Yisrael have determined that they are not going to wear tcheles? Meaning, how can you go against what the Gedolei Yisrael have to say on the topic? And that's a question that comes up all the time, and the truth is, it's a very important question, and it's the right question to ask. Meaning, whenever anything happens in Klal Yisrael, where someone does something that seems like it's a change on some level, it seems like it's something different, one has to ask, what do the Einei HaEda say? What do the Gedolei Yisrael say? And if one is going to make decisions absent the opinions of the Gedolei Yisrael, well then one is making a tremendous error. We have to have a tremendous amount of trust and seek guidance from Gedolei Yisrael. So I want to discuss what exactly are the primary reasons, because you can get lost in a forest of reasons. One will say it's based on this one Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, and one will say no, it's based on that Rashi, it's not green. This, you'll have dozens and dozens of reasons. So essentially what I did is I tried to narrow it down to three basic categories of Gedolim who reject the Tcheles. But before we get into those categories, one critical point, and that is that the question is not a 100% valid question. I said it's an important question to ask, because one has to make sure that we're seeking guidance from Gedolei Yisrael. But it's unfair to say, why don't Gedolei Yisrael wear tcheles? Because that's just not true. There are many Gedolei Yisrael that wear tcheles. We had one here this morning that spoke this morning. I think anyone who lives in America who eats kosher food relies heavily on two Gedolei Yisrael who both wore tcheles, who were the poskim for the Orthodox Union, and that both Rav Shachter and Rav Belsky, where Belsky Zichron Levracha, wore tcheles as well. So to just say, you know, as a blanket statement, Gedolei Yisrael don't wear tcheles, so how dare we? That's really an invalid way of presenting it, because there are Gedolei Yisrael that wear tcheles. Having said that, the majority of Gedolei Yisrael, at least publicly, and no one knows what everybody does privately, but at least publicly, do not wear tcheles. So I would like to discuss what the reasons might be. And as I mentioned, there are three basic categories that you could put people into, you could put Gedolei Yisrael into. Category number one, I'm just going to give you the headings first. Category number one are those who looked into the topic, researched, looked at all the proofs for and against, and nevertheless concluded that it's best not to wear the tcheles. Category number two are people that are not interested in researching the topic, because no amount of proofs that you're going to bring are going to change their mind. You can prove with 100% certainty that we've identified the chilazon that was used in ancient times and that was used by Chazal to make the tcheles and in the Beis HaMikdash to make the Bigdei Kuhuna, and it won't make an ounce of difference to them. They're still not going to use the tcheles. And we'll have to explain why. It's not, there's reasons for it. Category number three are those who researched the topic, looked through all of the proofs for and against, and came to the conclusion that we've found it. We have it. This is the genuine article. As I was in London about a year ago, and I was speaking there, and I was talking to the rabbi of the shul, who's a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I asked him, that I noticed he's wearing tcheles. I said, how would you have come to tcheles? He said, I researched it. It's the genuine article. So that's it. Now that's my favorite phrase. It's the genuine article, and it's really tcheles, but there are still people who are convinced that it's the genuine article, and nevertheless, will not wear tcheles for other reasons, for side reasons that we'll get into. So again, those are our three categories: those who research the topic and are not convinced, those who refuse to research the topic because they could never be convinced, those who research the topic are convinced and still don't wear it. So let's start with category number one. Category number one are those who research the topic and are not convinced. It almost defies logic. We're not going to go through all of the pratim right now, but to suggest that this is not even a safek tcheles defies all logic, meaning it fits so many of the criteria of what Chazal have to tell us. And certainly the archaeological evidence is overwhelming in terms of where we're finding the major dye centers and where we know chilazon came from, and the linguistic evidence and the chemical evidence is overwhelming. So one could ask the question, well, even if you're not convinced by any of it, you have nothing to lose. What do you have to lose by putting on the tcheles? And certainly if that's your primary reason for wearing tcheles, because you think, I have nothing to lose, I don't think there's anyone that's the primary reason. I mean, I don't think it makes sense to say you have nothing to lose. As it's attributed to many Gedolei Yisrael. I heard Rav Sternbach in an interview say, you know, you have nothing to lose by wearing glasses without lenses either, but, you know, it's silly. Why would you do that? Meaning if you hold that you're wearing something empty. I don't think that anybody wears tcheles because they think that there's nothing to lose. I think people wear tcheles because they think that we have proper evidence to prove that this is in fact the correct tcheles. But there's still this category of poskim who researched, looked at all the evidence, and again, not going to get into all of the details for and against, but looked at all the evidence and still said we're not going to wear it. And I think essentially that category breaks down into three subcategories. Some become fixated or are particularly influenced by a single passage somewhere that they have difficulty reconciling. For example, if one is convinced by the Gemara Masechta Shabbos that sad chilazon, that if someone, in order for one to violate the malacha of tzedah, the malacha of trapping on Shabbos, it needs to be something that one cannot catch with a single lunge. And I'm bringing that as an example because someone told me that Rav Heinemann Shlita, that's his primary kasha on the tcheles, that you can't catch it in a that sad by definition is something that one cannot catch in a single lunge, and certainly a snail is very easy to catch in a single lunge as long as you happen to be at the bottom of the ocean. It's very easy. You can just you're not going to have to chase it. It can't move too fast. So any raya like that, there are answers to and there are explanations. For example, that particular raya, the Shulchan Aruch seems pretty clear about this actually. I'm sure Rabbi Heinemann has answers in the other direction as well, that the Gemara that talks about catching in a single lunge is talking about something that's already in an enclosure. So it's already enclosed somewhat, so when do we consider it nitzod va'omed, already trapped, and when do we consider it that there's still further trapping to to be done. But something that's in its place where it lives and is not trapped at all yet, and it requires, as the Shulchan Aruch says, tachbulos, it requires some planning and some figuring and some trying to figure out how am I going to get to it, that could be the very definition of the melacha of tzeda. But I'm not here to address whether that raya is the strongest raya or not the strongest raya. I'm just trying to identify a category. That there are those Gedolei Yisrael that will take a passage and despite 15 rayas to the contrary, will say, yeah, but how does it fit that passage? And if it doesn't fit that passage, then that's not enough for me. Then there's a group of Gedolei Yisrael, again, still within this first category, who did the research and aren't convinced by the research, who are just very suspicious of any evidence that is brought in halacha from science, from archaeology, from chemistry. Certainly, if you read Rav Eliashiv's tshuva in Chelek Aleph of Kovetz Tshuvas, it's right at the beginning, in Simon Bey's of Kovetz Tshuvas, he seems to be in this category. It's somewhat of a cryptic tshuva. He seems to be Megala Tefach and Mechasa Tvachayim. He seems to not be giving you the whole story of what he's trying to express. But what, based on the words that he does say, it seems pretty clear that he's just suspicious of any of the scientific evidence that we have. And he gives a little history lesson. He writes, you know, one of the Gedolei Ha'admorim many years ago said that he found the Chilazon, Vihirish Olamos, and he shook the world and he started getting everyone, how could you be Mevatel Mitzvah Da'araisa? Ach Gedolei Yisrael Bedora Lo Eskimo Imo, says Rav Eliashiv, the Gedolei Adar in his generation didn't agree. And then, at some later time, referring to Rav Herzog, Ba'u Chokrim Ubitlus Tavar of Mikol V'kol. People came and proved that the Rezina Rabbi was incorrect. What he thought he had found, the Tcheles, was in fact not the Tcheles. Then he says, and now in a later generation, Kamu Anshe Mada, so I think we have three people here who he's referring to as the Anshe Mada, V'tanu Shekol Masha Chazvar Ko Shav Tafelu, and said that everything that we've seen until now is not the real Tcheles, V'rakei Mayodim U'makir Mesachilaz Unami. And only they know what the real chilazon is. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow someone else will come with evidence and will show that that evidence is not correct either. So where's the evidence? It doesn't matter. It's just the evidence you're bringing is scientific evidence. It doesn't mean anything to me, says Rav Eliashiv, because I don't know how to assess scientific evidence. Is that something that that makes something factual, that makes it that we should be accepted the halacha? He seems to assume that scientific evidence should never be accepted because it's not an absolute. Now that obviously is a very controversial stand that will affect a lot of different areas of halacha, and it's very questionable whether Rav Eliashiv would have applied that broadly as far as DNA evidence is concerned, and as far as many other areas of halacha, determining chameshas mine dagan, other things that science plays a critical role in terms of determining facts on the ground. Rav Asher Weiss takes a slightly more moderate approach. He's not mevatel science entirely, but he still certainly fits into this category of Gedolei Yisrael. He's mevatel specifically the science of archaeology. Rav Asher Weiss is a very forward-thinking person, and he's certainly very much on the cutting edge of medical technology as in his role as the posek for Shari Tzedek. But as far as archaeology is concerned, he views it with a great deal of suspicion. And in one of his tshuvas in Minchas Asher, Chelek Bei, Simon Gimel, he writes, Yodea Ani, he says, I know that in the world of world of academia, there is no doubt, if you ask any professor whether this is in fact the original chilazon, they will tell you that based on archaeology that it absolutely is true. However, he says, archaeology involves taking certain facts that you have, where let's say you're able to paint 50% of a picture, 60% of a picture, based on the facts that you have, and then filling in the blanks. And the filling in the blanks is all what he calls hashara, it's all estimation, it's a lot of guesswork, and he says the most logical guess that anyone would have is going to become the scientifically accepted opinion. So you'll have, the way he pictures it, or the way he at least describes it, is you have 10 scientists gathered together in a room, and they look at all the evidence, evidence, and then they'll each suggest a theory, and the most logical of those theories becomes fact, and that's what becomes accepted. And he says such a thing is not the way. He says, "Ach lo kach machsheves ha'alacha." That is not the way the halacha works. Ein zu darka velo zu svasa. That is not the way of halacha. That is not the language of halacha. Ha'ashara ein araya klal v'ikr. Guesses, estimation, that is not a raya at all. If you don't actually get into the details, it sounds pretty compelling. But once you start studying the actual details, it's not only Hashara that we're dealing with, meaning that there are facts on the ground that we know what was used thousands of years ago, because there are actual artifacts of things that were dyed with the Murex Snail, with our Chilazon, that long ago. And we know that Chazal were not concerned about a forgery from some other common dye from a snail that was that produced a blue dye, but nevertheless, that is the first category of gedolim that are against it. So again, the first category of gedolim looked at all of the rayos, but it did not accept it, either because there is a specific raya that they just can't get over, or they distrust science. And a third subcategory still within this group of those who look at the rayas, or are those who say, look, there's so many machlokos in the Rishonim about Tcheles, because they didn't have it. So you had so many machlokos about what it is. Who am I to determine whether Rashi's correct or the Rambam is correct? Who am I to determine whether the Ravid or the Balei HaTosfos is correct? If we need, you know, Rav Asher Weiss sometimes likes to say that he feels that in our generation, for some of the questions that we face, we don't need the Gedolim that we have, we need the Rashba and the Ramban. So, well, we need a Rashba and a Ramban to determine this. Who are we to determine? So, for example, Machlokas, the Rambam Ravid versus the Rambam and the Ravid and Rashi Vitosvos about how many strings of Tcheles. Rav Shechter referred to that Machlokas before. Machlokas that Dr. Greenspan just referred to, or he pointed out it's probably not a Machlokas, but at least on the surface seems like a Machlokas, what the color actually is. The Rambam talks about Shachar Kidio, although he's talking about the mucus, he's not actually talking about the final product. Rashi in Parshas Truma, Yarok, and maybe Yarok does mean green, maybe it doesn't. Rov Rishonim, and certainly if you would ask any school child who has a yeshiva education, what color is Tcheles, they will tell you it's blue, because we know the Maimar Chazal, that it's Dom Eliam, Dom Elerikia, and that's always been the accepted practice. But who am I to determine that it's not green, and that it's not black, and that it's blue? How can I make such a psak? Or, for example, you have a machlokas rishonim, whether that which produces the tcheles, the animal that produces the tcheles, has to be a kosher animal. Because, after all, the Gemara tells us, in Mesech HaShabbos, Daf Chav Ches, lo hukshru l'melech HaShemayim, elo or behem HaTorah bilvad. For melech HaShemayim, you need to use kosher animals. So the Rabbeinu Bechai assumes that the fish that produces the tcheles must be a kosher fish. However, the Rabbi Yehuda writes in a tshuva that obviously it can't refer to the tcheles as well, because the tcheles, it's not, the melech HaShemayim is only the color, and therefore it does not have to come from a kosher animal. He says, of course it doesn't come from a kosher animal, because the tcheles is a snail, and no snails are kosher. So the Nodibuda writes in the tshuva that obviously it doesn't come from a kosher animal. But who am I to determine whether we paskin like Rabbeinu Bechai, or we paskin like the Nodibuda? Or, for example, Rav Yashiv relates to this in his tshuva as well, is Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. When you're making the tcheles dye, do you add extra ingredients? Do you just use the pure dye, or do you add more into the mixture? So how do I know what we're supposed to do? How can I argue Rashi and the Rambam? In fact, in the Tshuvas Yeshuas Malko, he writes, "Mi yachriya bizman hazeh bein Rashi v'Rambam." Who could possibly paskin bizman hazeh between Rashi and the Rambam? Now, that is the final subcategory of the first group, those who cannot imagine paskining against the Rishon. I just point out that's somewhat difficult to accept as well. Cannot imagine paskining against the Rishon? Every halacha in Shulchan Aruch is paskined against some Rishon or another. Okay, so we don't have the Shulchan Aruch paskining, which identifying which snail is the chilazon. So what do we do in such a circumstance where the Shulchan Aruch didn't paskin against Rishonim, and we're tasked with paskining a halacha? So Moshe writes in the Tshuva in Yardei Chelak Aleph Simen Kuf Aleph, what you do is you paskin the halacha. You do your best. Someone asks Moshe, who do you think you are? It's hard to imagine the kinds of people that ask for Moshe these kinds of questions. But someone asks for Moshe, who do you think you are? You could argue on the Neid Yehuda, you could argue on Rabbi Kiv Eger, you could argue on the Chasam Sofer. You think you're greater than all of them? And Rabbi Moshe said, of course, I don't think I'm greater than any of them. But I think it's a rabbi's job, a job of a posek, to do his best to determine what the halacha is. And at times, that will lead you to go against the Divrei Achronim, and that's okay. You're allowed to do that. And then he writes, "V'gam lefa'amim al ezer rishonim k'sheish rayos nechonos." And if we have good rayos, we can go against rishonim. Now, mind you, Rav Moshe is not talking about being machria in the machlokas rishonim. He's talking about paskening against rishonim. To be machria, to decide when there already is a machlokas rishonim, what the majority opinion is, that's the rabbi's job, right? That's psak halacha. That's how it works. You have to paskin. So the fear of psak is, it's difficult to accept that the fear of psak should cause us to be mevatel mitzvah saseh midaraisa. It's just very difficult to accept such an approach. But that is all group number one. These are people who have studied tcheles and nevertheless rejected, again, either because of a particular source that's difficult to get to wrap the mind around, or because they distrust science and therefore think that many of the rayos are not compelling, or because they just can't enter into a machlokes rishonim to paskan halacha. Let's move on to group number two. Group number two are those gedolim that if you start to bring proofs, not in an immature way, but they would they at least mentally go like this and say, I am not listening, it doesn't matter. Why would they do that? Why would they not listen? Why would they not want to hear what the proofs are? So this group has two subcategories. Subcategory number one are the Mesorah people, meaning mainly the Soloveitchik family that had a tradition from the Beis Halevi, Rav Shachter referred to it before, that one needs to have a Mesorah in order to institute any mitzvah. I was just listening on the way down to Baltimore this morning. There was a radio show, the Headlines radio show, Dov Lichtenstein. He interviewed a few people about the issue of Tcheles just this week. So if you have the app, it's about an hour and 40 minutes of interviews on Tcheles issues. So it was right, seemed like the right thing to listen to on the way here this morning. So he interviewed Rabbi Yisrael Barkin from Lakewood, who brought, like, the whole interview was, give me a raya. So he brings a raya, another one, gives another one, and just every question was, and another raya, and another raya, and another raya. So he brought him 15 rayas. That was the whole interview. And then he interviewed Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich from Yeshiva University. And Rabbi Bleich was very much in the Mesorah camp, that we can't do it, there's no Mesorah. If there's no Mesorah for it, it's irrelevant. All of the proofs are not proofs, it doesn't make a difference. There's no, where does that come from? So Rav Soloveitchik had such a tradition in his family from the Beis Halevi, and it's printed in the Shirum L'Zecher Abba Mari, where Rav Soloveitchik writes in the Shirum L'Zecher Abba Mari, in the Maimer on Shnei Sugei Mesores, he writes in the name of his great grandfather of Yosef Dov Ta'an Keneged Va'amar She'ein Rayos Usvaros Yecholos Lochiach Shum Davar B'mili D'Shaychi L'Mesores Shel Sha'alavich V'Yagelcha. All of the proofs will not move me an inch because one needs a Mesorah. Shum Ein Asvara Machria Ki'im HaMesorah Atzma. Svara will not be Machria. Only Mesorah will be Machria. Kachro Avos V'Kachayu Noagim V'Kach Tzrichim Linhog. We saw our father do that way, and therefore we do that way. As Rav Shachter noted before, I think it was Rav Shachter noted before, maybe one of the other speakers, that there does seem to be some sort of contradiction in terms of what exactly the tradition was from the Beis Halevi. Because the Ritzina Rebbe, as has been noted several times, wrote three different svarim about Tcheles. The first one where he said, everybody, I really think we need to start looking for Tcheles. So why is no one thinking about this? Why is everyone just sitting there and no one's looking for this mitzvah d'oraisa? Then the second, I think I'm going to do it. Then the second sefer where he says, I did it, and I found something. And then third sefer says, hey, why is everybody yelling at me? I think I found it, and no one seems to like it. Everyone seems, not no one, but so many people seem to be against it. So he responds to all of the tainas, and he records what the tainas were against his tcheles. And the way he records the Beis Halevi's taina against him was entirely different than the Soloveitchik family's tradition. His way of recording the taina was, im nomar ki adag haya b'metzius. If you're going to say that this fish was always around, vigam hotzas tzivo hayadua b'kol zman me'azmanim. We knew how to extract the dye from this creature throughout history. Throughout every generation since the tcheles has been lost. And still, generations of Jews have chosen not to take advantage of it, not to use it, not to wear it. That's a Mesorah that this is not the Tcheles. And that was the main problem with the Ritziner Tcheles, was that there was essentially nothing new that the Ritziner Rebbe was offering. People already knew that of the existence of the fish that he was using. They already knew how to use it as a dye. And until you can explain why we haven't been using it, you have a Mesorah not to use it. The big nafkamina between Rav Soloveitchik's presentation of his great-grandfather's opinion and the Ritziner Rebbe's presentation of the Beis Halevi's opinion is our current tcheles. If you're going to say that a mitzvah requires a mesorah, and therefore we can't do it, so then ain't a chinami, then we wouldn't be able to use our tcheles either. But if you're going to say you need an explanation of why it hasn't been used, so that we have. We have very solid and strong explanations of why we lost the ability not to extract the dye, but to turn it, to actually make it dye something blue. We didn't know exactly when it needed to be exposed to sunlight. And that was lost in the secular world as well. It was not only that the Jewish people didn't have that expertise was gone for a very long time. So can't Cheles come back without a Mesorah? If you ask the Soloveitchik family, the answer would be no. But that's not so pashut at all. For example, the Maharil writes that one does not require a mesorah at all for tcheles, because he says that we don't wear a beged pishtan even nowadays, that we don't have tcheles, and you can make all the strings of pishtan as well, so there's no concern of shatness, because shami yachzru lilbosh tcheles bekarov. Who knows, maybe tomorrow they'll find the tcheles, and then you can have wool, and then you're going to have to worry about shatness issues if someone puts kaleilan, so we're not allowed to wear a beged of pishtan today, because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, nothing's going to happen tomorrow without a Mesorah, unless there's Tchias HaMeisin, and we have Mesorah again. No, but apparently not everyone accepted this tremendous Chiddush of the Soloveitchik family, that one requires a Mesorah to identify every single mitzvah. The second subcategory within this group that doesn't want to hear any of the rayos are those that say that, based on Midrashim, that Tcheles cannot come back until Yimos HaMashiach. So again, all of the proofs are irrelevant, because the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, for example, in Parsha Shlach, Va'achshav ein lanu el alavan shatcheles nignaz. Tcheles was nignaz. Not that we don't have it, nignaz. What does nignaz mean? It's been hidden from us. Sounds like purposely. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is keeping it from us until Yemos HaMashiach. This is a free that discusses how it's ganuz l'tzadikim la'asid lavo. It's going to only come back la'asid lavo. There's a famous passage in the Arizal in Shara Kavanos where he suggests that Tcheles can only exist in the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash. There are a few problems with that, with such an approach. And this is, by the way, Rav Sternbach's primary concern. Rav Sternbach writes in his Tshuvos that it can't be that in our generation we're going to have tcheles. It doesn't make sense. What does he mean? It doesn't make sense that we're going to have tcheles. He thinks that tcheles represents a certain giloy, a certain exposure to ruchnius and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that can't be in such a dark generation. It just can't happen in such a dark generation. As Rabbi Yisrael Barkin from Lakewood pointed out, one could argue that it can't be that you'll have thousands of people learning in a city in New Jersey in such a dark generation. It can't be that you'll have thousands of people learning in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim in such a dark generation. Okay, so we have no logical explanation, but it is. So if it is, that doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be. Also, historically, we can't have Tcheles without a Beis HaMikdash. They did. Meaning, when did we lose it? It was well after the Churban that the Tcheles was lost. So what do we do with the Arizal? The Arizal says only... So there's a tshuva, Rav Yaakov Hillel writes in a tshuva about paskening based on an Arizal. He says, you know when you pasken based on an Arizal? When the Arizal tells you, I'll read you the Lashon of Yaakov Hillel, Rakim Omer Lehedya Biderech Hora'ah. If the Arizal says, as a derech of hora'ah, to tell you, this is the way to paskin, shekein tzarich linhog, that you must do this, as vadei nachon v'tov lachosh lizar l'kayim dvarav. Then you should try to be choshesh for the Arizal. But short of that, when the Arizal makes comments about the reality, the metzius, but he's not giving you a specific instruction, we don't paskin based on the Arizal. So says Rav Yaakov Hillel. It should also be noted that the Rif and the Rush paskin halachos of Tcheles, even though they do not paskin the Hilchos and the Mashicha. They don't paskin, that's why there's no Rif and the Rush. In Menachos you have Rif and the Rush because you have all of Stam there, but in Kachim in general, you don't have Rif and the Rush. They don't deal with Hilchos and the Mashicha. So they clearly do not hold that this is some far off Hilchos and the Mashicha. And that brings us now to our third and final category of Gedolim who do not wear Tcheles. And again, this is the group of people of Gedolei Yisrael who studied the issue, are convinced that we have found it, and nevertheless do not wear the Tcheles. Why wouldn't they if they're convinced that we actually have it? So one subcategory over here is the approach of Rav Menachem Mendel Shafran, who put this in writing. I suspect that this is really what's behind the thinking of a lot of other people, but they just didn't put it into writing. Rav Menachem Mendel Shafran writes that it's clear to us that the Tcheles that we have is that the Chilazon, the Mirax, is the Chilazon, and the Tcheles we have is the genuine article. He says that Hadvarim Midabrim Ba'aratzmam, the Rayas speak for themselves. You don't need to be a genius to put it all together and realize that this is the correct Tcheles. So why don't Rov Gedolei Yisrael, he says, why don't they wear Tcheles? He says, Eino mishum shemefak bekim ba'amitas ha'inyan. It's not because they take any issue with whether this is true or not. Ela mishum shebimasayim shana ha'achronim nikva kargasha pnimit shalom mishanim dvarim gam im min hadin ha'yitzarech la'anigam al-shanosam. That for the last 200 years, Gedolei Yisrael have been very averse to any sort of change, even good change. Even change that would lead us to do a mitzvah. Why? V'zeh kahaganah. It is a protection. Neged maharsim amenasim l'shanos l'atim, against those who want to change things. You change this hanhaga today, who knows what you're going to change tomorrow and what's going to be changed. In one of the interviews I was listening to on the way down here, so one of the rabbis that he interviewed said, there's an association with the people who wear tcheles and the people that go on harabais. They're all the same people. They're going to change them. First they change tcheles, then they walk on harabais. Who knows what the next day brings. I happen to wear tcheles, I happen to not walk on harabais, but I don't know. Rav Shechter doesn't, I mean, it's not a coincidence. I don't, because Rav Shechter doesn't. Rav Shechter wears Tcheles, does not walk on Har Abayis. But that's one group that just, they're so afraid of change. Now, it happens to be interesting. Rav Shafran then has a very questionable assertion. He says, yes, that is true when you have a community that already has a way of doing things for years and generations, and that community must maintain their way of doing things, and we reject all change. But if you have a brand new community that pops up out of nowhere, nothing wrong with such a community wearing tcheles. So he says, you know, historically, all Jews were Haredim. So that's an old community. So the Haredi community can't change. But then this brand new community came, the Dati Lomi community. And that never existed in the history of the world. And that's a brand new thing. So they're allowed to wear tcheles. And he says, so Shalom Al Yisrael. That's why in so many of the Dati Lomi yeshivot, it's accepted that they wear tcheles. And in the Haredi yeshivot, it's not accepted so much that they wear tcheles. It's a brand new community. I don't know if you can call it a brand new community. You know, just every time someone has a slightly different hashkafa than what they had, what other people had the day before. I don't know if that makes a brand new community, but that's one approach within this third group. Second approach within this third group is what I've heard from Rav Belsky, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Belsky did personally wear tcheles, but in a question-answer session I had a recording of, and I'm going to say at the outset, I mentioned this in a shiur recently, and someone who was very close to Rav Belsky got very upset at me. Someone who learned b'chavrus with him for 18 years said, you shouldn't say this, there's no way it's true. But I just don't know what to tell you. I heard it with my own ears. I don't know whether to believe the guy who learned with him for 18 years or my own lying ears. What his approach was, but what he said when they asked him, he was very evasive, and this is going back many years. This is going back a few probably two decades already. They asked him, do you wear tcheles? And he was very evasive. He didn't answer. And they said, why wouldn't one wear tcheles? Is it because it's not the correct thing? And he started explaining why one wouldn't want to publicize that they are wearing tcheles. And he said that if the way it plays out is that in certain segments of the Orthodox community, it's become popular. And in other segments of the Orthodox community, it has not become as popular. So one who wears the tcheles is going to be associated with the segment of the Orthodox community in which it's become popular. And one may not want to be associated with that segment of the Orthodox community. So one could understand that if someone wants to be associated with a certain segment of the community and not with a different segment of the community, that they would avoid wearing the tcheles. He didn't speak personally. He just said, I could understand why one would have that approach. And he left it at that. So what he meant to say is, the way Rav Shechter said it a little more bluntly, is the reason, when I asked Rav Shechter many years ago, why isn't it so popular in the, I guess, the more Haredi or Yeshivish community? So Rav Shechter, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, of course, said, because we found it. It was our boys who found it, and that's why people don't want. If it was someone else who found it, then he thinks, okay, maybe that's a little cynical, but that's the suggestion of both Rav Belsky and Rav Shechter. The other final subcategory of this final group is Rav Sturmbach writes that he's concerned that even if you think it is the real tcheles, it's a violation of los hiskodidu, that a person is going to daven in a shul where the majority of the people don't wear tcheles, so you're going to wear tcheles, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, so it's a violation of los hiskodidu to do different hanhagos. I think that comment is a function of the fact that Rav Sturmbach doesn't really think it's the real tcheles, meaning if a person, if let's say Dalad Minim didn't exist, we lost what the Dalad Minim are, and someone were to actually secure a set of Dalad Minim that he's able to prove are actually Dalad Minim. We know exactly, even though community didn't have, I was talking to an Alter Yid recently who told me, the Gemara talks about a black Esrog. We actually just saw a picture. He says, you've probably never seen a black Esrog. This fellow told me when he was in Hungary, pre-war, there was like two Esrogim within the next 10 communities, and they hired Goyim to bring the Esrogim on wagons from shul to shul and pass the Esrogim. He said, by the time I held it in my hands, it was entirely black, and it was the most Mehudar Esrog I've ever seen in my entire life. So if someone were to show up to shul, would you say, no, you can't take the Esrog, no one else in shul has an Esrog? No, you would of course say, you're doing a mitzvah daraisa. If you happen to not really believe that you're doing a mitzvah daraisa, then you could start getting into hanhagos and los hiskodidibur. You're dealing with a mitzvah daraisa versus not doing a mitzvah daraisa, one would not say that would be a violation of los hiskodidu. So to summarize, there are essentially three basic groups of Gedolei Yisrael who might not wear tcheles: those who are not convinced by the research for any number of reasons, because they don't trust the science, because they're fixated on a particular maramakom, or they don't want to argue in a machlokas rishonim; those who don't want to hear any of the research, either because there's no Masorah or because they believe it's hidden until Yemos HaMashiach; and those who are convinced but just don't want to wear it, either because of a protection against changes in our community or a fear of being associated with a community that they wish not to be associated with. I just want to point out that one thing that I find very inspiring about this entire parsha in history of the rebirth of Tcheles and how we have thousands of Jews, Baruch Hashem, now who are being mekayim a mitzvah d'oraisa that was lost for so many centuries. And think about it. You know, imagine if Esra, if Dalet Minim were lost and someone were able to bring it back. That's one day a year a mitzvah d'oraisa, unless you're in the mikdash, where it would be 7 days. One day a year a mitzvah d'oraisa. For how long? For the few moments that you're holding your Dalet Minim. Here we have a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's 365 days a year. Every single second, Menachas Chinuch writes that a mitzvah that's done constantly, that's a constant mitzvah, rises to an entirely new level. It may not be subject to the rules of Amavazvez, Alivazvez, Yosem Michomesh. It may have entirely different rules because it's so intense, because it's a performance of a mitzvah every second. And who brought back this mitzvah? Was it the Gadol Hador that brought back this mitzvah? With all due respect to the great Talmidei Chachamim who brought it back, none of them are professional rabbis. Look what people who are interested, working Leman Hashem, working the Shem Shemayim, are able to accomplish for Klal Yisrael. Three people who, in the way they would describe themselves, regular balabatim. I'm just a dentist. I don't even know the professions. I'm just are able to bring back a mitzvah d'oraisa for thousands of Jews. That's something that should inspire all of us, wherever, whatever area in life we can make an impact. It should inspire all of us to be able to make such an impact on Klal Yisrael.
Thank you again, Rabbi Leibowitz. We're going to have a minute or two for questions, and then we'll have our next speaker. I just would like to make a comment, Rabbi Leibowitz. I always look forward to seeing you and to hearing the shiur. I think I've listened to your shiur over about four or five times just to like listen to it. Just two clarifications for the future. Number one, Lahavdil from Rav Schechter, I'm not a Talmud Chacham, but I am not good with politics, and that's not Lahavdil and Rav. And sometimes just says things too straight. So just to clarify, number one, yes, there are three people who are from New Jersey who wore and wear knitted kippot, and definitely made Aliyah to Eretz Israel, which might be thought of as being Zionistic. However, our rabbi is Rav Eliyahu Tavger from Russia, does not wear a knitted kippah, lives in Kiryat Sefer, has a long beard, and teaches all day in a yeshiva in Brisk. So that's number one. And as a true Talmud Chacham, he's also a big anav and refuses to be in public. Doesn't like to be in public. And lastly, in a minute you'll see our next speaker, and you'll see that it's not only a specific community that's wearing it. And as much as it would be nice to blame problems that Yeshiva University and other places have, that's not the only reason why Tchelet is not catching on. questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, just a point of clarification. Spoke about Rebelsky, spoke about Rabba. One of his Talmidim, I am a supplier of Tchelet locally, in up north. One of his Talmidim used to buy Tchelet for me all the time. And one time he came to me and said, I need a set of Nikuts Lishma. And I said, who's it for? And he said, he's my Rebbe. And I didn't know at the time that it was Rebelsky. And he picked it up, he told me it was Rebelsky. I saw Rebelsky at a wedding a couple of weeks later, and I said, did so-and-so give you the Tchelet? Rebelsky picked up his jacket and said, yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's no machlokas whether Rebelsky wore tchelis. I think everyone, Rav Yisrael Barkin told me that he was a nephew of Rebelsky, that at the end of his life he started even encouraging people to put on the Talis Gadol as well. I'm not sure what exactly changed, but the question was just about how much he was willing to publicize it, that when he was wearing his kapata, he wore it under his kapata, but he didn't have generally on his Talis Gadol. So Mipia Shmua, I've heard such concerns. Initially, years ago, they said that was Rav Yashiv's primary concern, but I don't think we've ever been able to verify, right?
So Rav Schechter brought that down, also in the name of Rav Yashiv. I haven't heard it directly. We did a survey as to what are the reasons why people don't wear tchelet, and costs did come up. I just heard a new chiddush from Rav Leibowitz that it's a mitzvah tamidis in which the halacha of not being motzi yoter mechomesh might actually go, which means...
It says that by mezuzah.
So, which I think, for all those who don't understand, it means
You got to spend whatever it takes to buy a pair of tefillos. I don't necessarily hold that. I wear the cheapest tefillos available. It's 80 shekels, which is equivalent of 3.6 around.
Just to make, can I make a comment about that? I wear the most expensive tefillos available.
Right, which is a problem, which I tried to get from Shekels to get a cheaper one, and it won't budge.
I have four sons, and as they become bar mitzvah, they're all wearing the most expensive tefillos available. And I'm not an usher muflug, I don't think. I mean, I guess by medieval standards maybe, but it's certainly by modern standards, I'm not an usher muflug. But, you know, I know that if I'm willing to spend every single year, I don't know, $60, $80 on my set of dalet minim, so a pair of tefillos I have for years, and I wear it every single day. I don't know, it's a... What? How much is my tefillos? About $150. So. More strings and longer strings.
Yeah. Yes, question? No, that was great. Thank you very much.
Is there a reason why you don't have a package that Rav Hav is arriving? According to Rav Shachter, probably not all of the followers is close to us. And since we did that, we have not produced a package with two strings of tefillos.
Okay, so... Yeah, so I'm going to also get personal. Since the Rav got personal, I'm going to get personal. I have six boys, okay? And I live in Israel, and I'm not an usher muflag, but I get paid by Petil Chayet, and I can't afford six pairs of tosos for each kid over bar mitzvah. One is under bar mitzvah, but anyhow. So I wear a Rebbe string also because my Rebbe, when it comes to tzitzis, is Rabbi Leo Tavger, who paskin to do like Rebbe, which is one string. And we have a short Rebbe string, which costs 80 shekels, which is $20, which I originally actually wore a longer one, and as I had more and more children, decided that I should have the shorter one. My kids, though, sometimes do want the longer ones, and I'm very happy that they want me to spend a little extra on the tefillos. We do have actually sometimes tosfos packages pre-made. We don't make them pre-made mainly because since we've been doing it for 25 years, less than 3% of our customers, whatever you want to call it, those people who are running after the mitzvah, less than 3% are buying tosfos. It's a little bit maybe not accurate because some people may be buying two rivets in order to get tosfos, which is what we recommend. Certainly in the case of Rav Shechter, who not only says tosfos, but also says to do the longest possible tying, you must buy two sets of rivet in order to do his method of tying, so there's no point in us making that. Okay, last question, and then we have Rav Halberstam. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, are wives wear shaitlach that cost $500 to thousands of dollars? And it's not a mitzvah d'oraita to wear a shaitlach.
Not only is not a mitzvah d'oraita, you should listen to Rav Adi Yosef talk and a few others. It's, yeah.
Why is a few dollars difference in the chelet?
I don't know. I was going to also mention that Rav Leibowitz, Baruch Hashem wasn't on competition, the cost of education, the Torah study here in America compared to Eretz Israel. The one chance for actually people making aliyah is the fact that it costs so much to teach your kids here in America. Okay.